our studies, and on this occasion it's the Holy Oblation, Sanctuary and the Prince in His Worship.
As you will have noticed, brethren and sisters, that section is taken primarily from chapters 45 and 46 of Ezekiel. We thought that we would have a look at the meaning of the word oblation. You'll notice we haven't had an introductory reading, so perhaps in order to get the spirit of this area, we'll read the first 8 verses of Ezekiel chapter 45, where we read, "Moreover, when ye shall divide by lots the land for an inheritance, ye shall offer an oblation unto Yahweh, an early portion of the land. The length shall be the length of 25,000 reeds, and the breadth shall be 10,000. This shall be holy in all its borders round about. Of this there shall be for the sanctuary 500 in length, with 500 in breadth, square round about, and 50 cubits round about for suburbs thereof," or "for an open space" is a better rendering. "And of this measure shalt thou measure the length of 25,000, and the breadth of 10,000, and in it shall be the sanctuary and the most holy place. The holy portion of the land shall be for the priests, the ministers of the sanctuary, who shall come nigh to minister unto Yahweh, and it shall be a place for their houses, and an holy place for the sanctuary. And 25,000 of length, and 10,000 of breadth, shall also the Levites, the ministers of the house, have for themselves a possession for 20 chambers. And he shall appoint the possession of the city 5,000 broad and 25,000 long over against the oblation of the holy portion. It shall be for the whole house of Israel. And a portion shall be for the prince on the one side, and on the other side of the oblation of the holy portion, and of the possession of the city before the oblation of the holy portion, and before the possession of the city from the west side westward, and from the east side eastward, and the length shall be over against one of the portions from the west border unto the east border. In the land shall be his possession in Israel, and my princes shall no more oppress my people, and the rest of the land shall they give to the house of Israel according to their tribes." And that rest is of course enumerated for us in chapter 48 verses 1-7, which we will not look at now. So we've seen that the word oblation appears in verses 1 and verse 6 and twice in verse 7. It appears elsewhere of course. But it seems an unusual word, does it not, brethren and sisters, for a plot of land. Recall that Jacob bought a parcel of land after his name was changed to Israel. And that word parcel is from the Hebrew word chelkwah. And in 1 Kings 9:26, which you needn't turn up, in connection with Naboth's vineyard, the same word chelkwah appears as plat of land. And there are other renderings, such as field, ground, a piece of land or a part. And so we can see that an oblation in this context is a plot of land. And we'll see from verse 1 that it is an holy portion. About the middle of verse 1 of chapter 45, "He shall offer an oblation unto Yahweh, an holy portion of the land." So it's something separate. But I understand that this word oblation is particularly a Levitical term. And remember that Ezekiel was a priest. The Hebrew word is terumah, and it means a present or a gift, as offered up. And it's from another Hebrew word, room, R-U-W-M, if you want to anglicise it, meaning to be high, to rise, or to raise, and by implication, therefore, to exalt or to extol. It's to make high in the sense of the, in this case, in the building of a house as well. Just remember the words of Ezra, "to give us a reviving, to set up the house of our Elohim, and to repair the desolations of it, and to give us a wall in Judah and Jerusalem." And so here we have a house in Ezekiel, a house of prayer for all nations. Now when the land is divided, as it is pointed out in chapter 48, there will be offered, note the words, 45 verse 1, "ye shall offer," that's the word there, isn't it? "Offer a section of the land," and it's termed an oblation. In effect, it is a gift for the priesthood. Now, Brother Dennis kindly had these handed out this morning, and if you'll turn to illustration number 3, I think you'll see from that it is fairly simply defined, this holy oblation. Ezekiel 48 is here, is it not? How the tribes are apportioned their parts. And there, roughly in the middle, not quite, is the area of the holy oblation. Also, if we turn to illustration number one, again, we see it, as it were, in close-up, don't we? Can we just turn to chapter 48 and read verse 9? The oblation that ye shall offer unto Yahweh shall be 25,000 in length and of 10,000 in breadth, and for them, even for the priests, shall be this oblation toward the north, 25,000 in length, toward the west, 10,000 in breadth, and toward the east, 10,000 in breadth, and toward the south, 25,000 in length. And the sanctuary of Yahweh shall be in the midst of it. And so it's for a priest's portion. Now, like we did this morning, I think we've got to go back to earlier times in order that we might get the idea of this. And can we go back, therefore, to Deuteronomy chapter 18? Deuteronomy 18. And here we have an example of a priest's portion. Deuteronomy 18, verse 1. Levitical priests, that is all the tribe of Levi, shall have no part nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of Yahweh made by fire in his and his inheritance. Therefore shall they have no inheritance among their brethren. Yahweh is their inheritance, as he hath said unto them. And this shall be the priest's due from the people, from them who offer a sacrifice, whether it be ox or sheep, and they shall give unto the priest the shoulder, and the two cheeks, and the maw, and the first fruit also of thy corn, and of thy wine, and of thine oil, and the first of the fleece of thy sheep shalt thou give him. For Yahweh thy Elohim hath chosen him, Levi, out of all the tribes, to stand to minister in the name of Yahweh, him and his sons for ever. We get this idea of something that is separated and offered up to the priesthood. If we turn over to Numbers chapter 31 here, we're in the company of the Midianites in their relation for the moment to Israel. Verse 2, Numbers 31, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterward shalt thou, Moses of course, be gathered unto thy people. And Moses spake unto the people, saying, arm some of yourselves unto the war, and let them go against the Midianites, and avenge Yahweh of Midian. Of every tribe 1,000 throughout all the tribes of Israel shall ye send to war, so that were delivered out of the thousands of Israel 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. And Moses sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe, them and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the war, with the holy instruments and the trumpets to blow in his hand. And so the Midianites here, on this occasion, were going to be judged by Yahweh through Israel. We can't read all the chapter, but we know that Israel prevailed because it was of Yahweh. When we come to verse 25, Yahweh spake unto Moses, saying, take the sum of the prey that was taken, both of man and of beast, thou and Eleazar the priest, and the chief fathers of the congregation, and divide the prey into two parts, between them that took the war upon them who went out to battle, and between all the congregation, and levy a tribute unto Yahweh of the men of war who went out to battle, one soul of 500, both of the persons and of the beeves, and of the asses and of the sheep. Take it of their half, and give it unto Eleazar the priest for an heave offering unto Yahweh. Now that word heave offering, again, is the word terumah, that is rendered oblation in Ezekiel. Verse 37, as I say, we can't read all the verses. And Yahweh's tribute of the sheep was 603 score 15. So we see it is a tribute to Yahweh. This is the point. Verse 41, and Moses gave the tribute which was Yahweh's heave offering unto Eleazar the priest, as Yahweh commanded Moses. And verse 48, and the officers who were over the thousands of the host, the captains of the thousands and captains of hundreds, came near unto Moses, and said unto Moses, thy servants have taken the sum of the men of war who are under our charge, and there lacketh not one man among us. We have therefore brought an oblation, a terumah, unto Yahweh. What every man hath gotten of jewels, of gold, of chains, bracelets, rings, earrings, necklaces, to make an atonement for our souls before Yahweh. And Moses and Eleazar the priest took the gold of them, even all wrought jewels, and all the gold of the offering that they offered up get the idea of the meaning of the word oblation to Yahweh? Of the captains of thousands and of the captains of hundreds were 16,750 shekels, for the men of war had taken spoil, every man for himself. And Moses and Eleazar the priest took the gold of the captains of thousands and hundreds and so on, for a memorial for the children of Israel before Yahweh. And so, the custody of this particular offering up, although it was Yahweh's, was in the Levite hands. And in chapter 35 we find that there are certain cities set aside for the Levites out of the tribes. And so again, it's a type of an oblation. Now, as we have seen, that word terumah is also rendered heave offering. And if we just go back to Exodus 29 and verse 26, it says, "Thou shalt take the breast of the ram of Aaron's consecration, and wave it for a wave offering before Yahweh, and it shall be thy part. And thou shalt sanctify the breast of the wave offering, and the shoulder of the heave offering, the terumah, which is waved, which is heaved up or lifted up of the ram of the consecration, even of that which is for Aaron and of that which is for his sons. And it shall be for Aaron's and his sons by statute forever from the children of Israel, for it is an heave offering. And it shall be an heave offering from the children of Israel of the sacrifices of their peace offerings, even their heave offerings unto Yahweh." And again, the word is terumah. So that was the priest's portion in that respect. Well, then when we come to the peace offerings, which are in Leviticus chapter 7, you get a similar idea. Leviticus chapter 7 and verse 29. "Speak unto the children of Israel, saying, He that offereth the sacrifice of his peace offerings unto Yahweh shall bring his terumah unto Yahweh of the sacrifice of his peace offerings. His own hand shall bring the offerings of Yahweh made by fire, the fat with the breast it shall bring. It shall he bring, that the breast may be waved for a wave offering before Yahweh, and the priest shall burn the fat upon the altar, but the breast shall be Aaron's and his sons. And the right shoulder shall he give unto the priest for an heave offering, a terumah of the sacrifices of your peace offerings." So we've got this idea now, haven't we, of this offering up. And just turning over into chapter 23, I think rather beautifully we see another aspect, because we're in the area of the feasts of Yahweh. Chapter 23, we've got first of all the Passover, then the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And when we come to verse 10, it's the Feast of First Fruits. "Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, When ye are come into the land which I give unto you, and shall reap the harvest thereof, then ye shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest unto the priest. And he shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh to be accepted for you. On the morrow after the Sabbath the priest shall wave it, and ye shall offer that day when ye wave the sheaf and he lamb without blemish of the first year for a burnt offering unto Yahweh." We know to what the he lamb is referring, in connection with this offering up, as it were, of the first fruits, like unto a terumah, ye shall wave the sheaf before Yahweh. Now, if we turn over to John's Gospel, John chapter 20, our master has been crucified and has been placed in the tomb and now has been resurrected again, and Mary comes to find him, finding the tomb empty. And in verse 17 of John 20, verse 16, he reveals himself to her. She uses the word Rabboni unto him. "And Jesus said unto her, Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father, but go to my brethren and say unto them, I ascend to my Father and your Father, and to my Elohim and your Elohim." And so it's an antitypical wave or heave offering that we have here that he is referring to. Ascended, an offering, a lifting up, like the heave offering was. Mary, as you well know, was a typical bride, representing the multitudinous bride which we referred to this morning. But not here was the time for embracing, touch me not. But now here in the kingdom age, there is a time for embracing. As it says in Songs, his left hand is under my head, his right hand doth embrace me. So here and now is the time for embracing. Yes, even with those pierced hands. He is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O ye daughters of Jerusalem. And so we have this idea of a teruma, something that is offered up, and he was offered up as a sacrifice, in that sense that it refers to in John 20. He was the oblation that was offered to the service of Yahweh, if you like. But here, we have something physical. That is an oblation offered to the service of Yahweh of the tribes, out of Ezekiel 48, unto the priests, the sons of Zadok. Let's go back to Ezekiel, shall we? Did we notice that? Ezekiel 48. Verse 11, it shall be for the priests that are sanctified of the sons of Zadok who have kept my charge. And Brother Michael has weighed onto that, and no doubt Brother Dennis will later on. So we won't go too deeply into that. But again, we can just think of this illustration, number one, that Dennis has done. There is that oblation, that part that is offered up, as it were. And we've seen the measurements of it, 2,500 reeds square. The tabernacle in the wilderness was Levitical, in that only the Levites were allowed to officiate, and specific families of the Levites were enumerated. The sons of Gershon on the west, of the sons of Kohath on the south, and the sons of Merari on the north, and on the east was Aaron and his sons, along with Moses, all Levites, and they had the charge of the sanctuary, and no stranger could approach. Can we just turn back to Numbers in this connection? Numbers chapter 1. Numbers chapter 1, the end of that chapter, verse 51. And when the tabernacle setteth forward, the Levites shall take it down. And when the tabernacle is to be pitched, the Levites shall set it up. And the stranger who cometh nigh shall be put to death. Note that, the stranger who cometh nigh shall be put to death. In other words, no other Levite can come nigh there. And the children of Israel shall pitch their tents, every man by his own camp, and every man by his own standard throughout their hosts. But the Levites shall pitch round about the tabernacle of testimony. Why? That there be no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. And the Levites shall keep the charge of the tabernacle of testimony. And the children of Israel did according to all that Yahweh commanded Moses. Now the late Brother Ed Watts suggests that the only approach by other than Levites was in the company of a Levitical priest. And then he could only go as far as the outer door, the outer court. And his sacrifice there would be slain by the priests. And we notice in chapter 2 and verse 2 of Numbers, every man of the children of Israel shall pitch by his own standard with the ensign of their father's house far off about the tabernacle of the congregation shall they pitch. And so the rest of Israel should pitch far off about the tabernacle. And here in Ezekiel we get the same idea. They are far off, as it were, from the oblation area, except for two tribes. That is Judah on the north and Benjamin on the south. And again, we see that if we just have a look at illustration number 3. Because we see that the majority of the tribes are far away from the area of the oblation, except, as we have said, Judah and Benjamin. Now, in chapter 45 of Ezekiel, in verse 3, we are informed that in it, that is in the oblation area, shall be the sanctuary, the most holy. That's the meaning of the word sanctuary, isn't it? Something separated. It's the meaning of the word holy as well. In what part of the oblation is this sanctuary? Because we've got the sanctuary here depicted for us, haven't we? Well, Brother Sully reasons the point from verse 5 concerning the portion of the Levites. Let's read verse 5 of Ezekiel 45. And the 5 and 20,000 of length and the 10,000 of breadth shall also the Levites, the ministers of the house, have for themselves for a possession for 20 chambers. Well, if we look at illustration number 1, perhaps we shall see that the portion of the Levites is the middle portion of the oblation. And we'll see the sanctuary is only just poking, if you like, into that portion. Can you see that, how Brother Dennis has put it on there? Most of it is in the portion of the sons of Zadok. And so this area, which is approximately a mile square, has its southernmost limits in the outer court, its southernmost limits, in other words, its outer court, this end, in the area of the Levites, whereas the rest of it is in the sons of the Zadok's area. And so we've got this depiction here of the sanctuary, which is 1 mile square. And we're probably all familiar with that sort of picture, where we get this circular temple surrounding the mount, with within this circular area, which is termed the inner court, the most holy, is the elevated altar, chapter 43 again, and verse 13. This is the oblation that you shall offer, the sixth part. 43 and verse 13. And these are the measures of the altar after the cubits. The cubit is a cubit and a handbreadth. Even the bottom shall be a cubit, and the breadth a cubit, and the border of it by its edge round about shall be a span. And this shall be the higher place of the altar. And from the bottom upon the ground, even to the lower settle, or edge, shall be 2 cubits, and the breadth 1 cubit. And from the lower ledge, even to the greater ledge, shall be 4 cubits, and the breadth a cubit. And so we can see that this most holy area and the altar are within the prerogative of the seed of Zadok. I think Brother Michael drew a good distinction, did he not, between the seed of Zadok and the Levites. And it is their prerogative to offer sacrifices. And as we have seen, it is suggested that this altar will be of some considerable elevation. Brother Dennis laid on this, did he not? As it says in verse 13, this shall be the higher place of the altar. Again, this altar is 4 square in the central area. We've seen the measurements, haven't we? And verse 17 also indicates the approach, or the ascent by the stairs, shall look toward the east. And we've got it on here. This is looking towards the east from the altar. In looking toward the east, of course, it's looking toward the residence of the prince, which Brother Michael pointed out earlier. It also appears that waters emanate from the south side of the altar. That is towards us, as that picture is there. And so we've got some idea now of the oblation, particularly from Brother Dennis's depiction in illustration 1. We won't go over those again. But perhaps just to mention that there is that lower portion. We've mentioned the area of the sons of Zadok, the portion of the Levites, but the lower part is the possession of the city. It's a rather narrower band in the area of the oblation, and it tells us about in chapter 48, verse 18 and 19, which we won't read, but Brother Sully likens it to a huge garden city hotel in which are received all who would desire to visit the temple. And so I think we can see from that that the oblation area is not only an offering, a terumah itself, but also a place where offering is made in the sanctuary, which is in the midst of it. And so we now come to this other area, which we have to look at in connection with chapter 45, and that is verse 7, a portion shall be for the prince, but particularly we are dealing with the prince in his worship. Now, because certain alternative thoughts have been put forward about who is the prince, and although Brother Michael's talked about it, we agree that I would also talk about it. As he said, the word prince is nasi. It means an exalted one, as he said, a king. And if we just turn back in Ezekiel to chapter 34, we've got a mention of this same word, which you will readily recognise. Chapter 34 and verse 23, where it says, I will set up one shepherd over them, he shall feed them, even my servant David. He shall feed them and he shall be their shepherd, and I, Yahweh, will be their Elohim, and my servant David a prince, a Nasi, among them. I, Yahweh, have spoken it, and I will make with them a covenant of peace, and so on. And again in chapter 37, on verse 25, the last line, shall we say, in that verse, and my servant David shall be their prince, a Nasi, forever. So the spirit of that, of course, is in type David, beloved, meaning of his name, forever. So in no way can it be a mortal prince that we're looking at. It's the same idea as Nisai, as in Yahweh Nisai, to exalt, to be lifted up. as an ensign or a banner. In other words, the lofty one. So in effect, we're looking at the spirit of Psalm 2, are we not? Yet I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. That word set in the Hebrew is nekak, and it means to anoint. Hence it's speaking of the anointed, is it not? The one who is the Messiah. When we think about it, it is only the Master that can fulfill all these titles that we have in mind. A king, a Melech, Yahweh Nisai, the one lifted up and elevated. The Messiah, the anointed, a Nasi, an exalted one, a king. And therefore, because of that, he is a Melchizedek, because he's also a priest. Therefore, he is a king priest. And who else can fulfill those types? Like the saints who are called upon to walk in the heavenlies, the Shemayim, using the Hebrew word, in Christ Jesus, so was the anointed exalted to sit in the heaven, the Shemay, at the right hand of Yahweh. And his throne here in Ezekiel, it is on earth, yes, but it is an exalted one. We've seen that. How Brother Dennis explained this morning, the configuration of the land will be altered. And so it's lifted up above the other surface of the earth around it. And so it's the Shemay again, isn't it, the heavenlies, from where he will rule. The law shall go forth from Zion, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. And O Zion, get thee up into the high mountain. Now another appropriate meaning of this word Nasi is vapour or cloud, as something that rises above the surface of the earth. And if you were up early enough this morning, you would have seen this. But it speaks really of the oneness of Christ and the bride. Isaiah 26 says, thy dead shall live, together with my dead body shall they arise. Wake and sing, ye that dwell in the dust, for thy dew, vapour, cloud, is like the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out her dead. And so we see this dew risen like this vapour, a cloud. And we know Dr. Thomas likens this so beautifully, does he not, to resurrection. And here are the resurrected ones, caught up in the clouds, massive, to meet Yahweh, or to meet the Lord in the aerial forevermore. And they are referred to, these, in Ezekiel 45, verse 8 and 9. The land shall be his possession, Israel, and my princess. These are the other ones. My princess shall no more oppress my people. And again in verse 9, thus saith Adonai Yahweh, let it suffice you, O princess of Israel. And so we've got this idea of a princely community. He's princely of Israel. Now there are other words that are rendered in the English as prince, but they come from different Hebrew words. One such is Sar. We get it in Exodus 2:14, and we get it in Daniel 10, and it means a head or an official, a captain, a governor, or a steward, and it is rendered prince. And Dr. Thomas takes hold of this and he says, Tsar applies to Christ when breaking the Russian Gogian Confederacy. That's one of the actions of this particular attribute, if you like, of prince. Another word is Nagid. Appears in 1 Kings 14. Again, it's rendered captain, noble, honourable, and prince. But it's the captain of our salvation here that we're looking at. And again, Dr. Thomas takes hold of this and says, as a redeemer, he is styled the Most Holy One. A Nagid, Messiah the Prince, a Prince Royal. In other words, a Prince in prospect of becoming a King, or a Melech. It's rather like the Prince of Wales of this country, who might be hoping to become a King. And so, here in Ezekiel, it's Nasi, an exalted one, a King, a Chief, one lifted up. You get it in Psalm 110, well-known words really, therefore shall he lift up the head. And so we have this progression, haven't we? Tsar, when anointed, becomes a Nagid. And a Nagid, when elevated, lifted up to his throne, becomes a Nasi, a king priest, as we have in Ezekiel. So we have a Melchizedek, a king priest, as opposed to the Mosaic constitution of things. Brother Michael referred to Hebrews 7, and I'm going to do likewise, because having said what we've said, Hebrews 7 should fall into place, I feel. Hebrews chapter 7, Melchizedek area, isn't it? Verse 12, for the priesthood being changed, there is made of necessity a change also of law. For he of whom these things are spoken pertaineth to another tribe, of which no man gave attendance at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord sprang out of Judah, of which tribe Moses spake nothing concerning the priesthood, and it is yet far more evident, for after the similitude of Melchizedek there ariseth another priest, Christ of course, who is made not after the law of a carnal commandment, but after the power of an endless life. For he testifieth, thou art a priest forever, after the order of Melchizedek. And verse 26, for such an high priest became us, or who was fitting for us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and made higher, that's the idea of a Nasi, made higher than the heavens, who needeth not daily as those priests, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins, and then for the people's. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. And chapter 8, verse 1, now of the things which we have spoken, this is the sum. We have such an high priest who is set on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister of the sanctuary, and of the true tabernacle which Yahweh pitched, and not man. Verse 6, but now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much also he is the mediator of a better covenant, which was established upon better promises. Verse 10, for this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days. So now he's looking forward. Saith Yahweh, I will put my laws into their mind and write them in their hearts, and I will be to them a Elohim, and they shall be to me a people, and they shall not teach every man his neighbour and every man his brother, saying, know Yahweh, for all shall know me, from the least even to the greatest. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their iniquities will I remember no more. And again in chapter 9, verse 11, but Christ being come, high priest of good things to come, by a greater and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building, neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption. For if the blood of bulls and of goats and the ashes of an heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctify to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to Yahweh, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living ale? And for this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament, that by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the First Testament, they who are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. So we've got these ideas, haven't we, that he is the true Melchizedek, the one who is the Nasi. And Paul is comparing the Mosaic and the New Covenants. It's a new constitution of things, of course. The Mosaic is done away. What does Paul say? It was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices, that could not make him that did the service perfect, as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in meats and drinks and divers washings and cardinal ordinances, opposed on them until the time of Reformation. And of course Ezekiel's area is the time of Reformation. In the Mosaic, therefore, we see the pattern of the things that should come. But now in the millennial age, under the Abrahamic new constitution, the sacrifices enacted are a looking back to the central purpose of Yahweh in the days of Messiah, who himself was the covenanted victim, who by his own blood, as we have read, entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption. Let me just turn to Zechariah chapter 6. Zechariah chapter 6 and verse 12. Speaking to him, saying, thus speaketh Yahweh of armies, behold, the man whose name is the branch, he shall grow up out of his place, he shall build the temple of Yahweh. He's looking forward to this period of time, isn't he, Zechariah? He shall build the temple of Yahweh, he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. It's only speaking of one man. And so it's the rulership on the throne and the priest upon his throne that he's speaking of, and Melchizedek. That's what he's talking about. Now the first aspect of the prince in his worship seems to follow the oblation offering of all the people of the land. Just turn back, shall we, to Ezekiel 45. Ezekiel 45 and verse 16, it says, all the people of the land shall give this oblation for the prince in Israel. And then we come to verse 17, and it shall be the priest's part to give burnt offerings and meal offerings and drink offerings in the feasts and in the new moons and in the Sabbaths, in all solemnities of the house of Israel. He shall prepare the sin offering, the meal offering, and the burnt offering, and the peace offering, to make reconciliation for the house of Israel. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, in the first month, in the first day of the month, thou shalt take a young bullock without blemish, and cleanse the sanctuary. And the priest shall take of the blood of the sin offering, and put it upon the posts of the house, and upon the four corners of the settle of the altar, and upon the posts of the gate of the inner court. And so shalt thou do the seventh day of the month, for every one that erreth, and for him that is simple. So shall ye reconcile the house. So that enactment there is going to take place up here, on the high altar. That's what it's telling us, isn't it? And this is part of the prince in his worship. We notice that it commences on the first, in the first month, in the first day of the month. And in verse 17 it says, reconciliation for the house of Israel. Burnt offerings, meal offerings, drink offerings, and peace offerings. And it includes a cleansing of the sanctuary, verses 18 and 19. And Dr. Thomas suggests that this occupies 7 days, and also records in reference to verses 19 and 20. This is a grand and important national event, for it is nothing less than the reconciling of the house of Israel itself, which will complete the reconciliation of the house of Israel in form as well as in principle. The reconciling of the temple, altar, and inner court will be the formal memorial celebration of the reconciling of the tribes of Israel, when, having believed in Jesus and been baptized into him, Yahweh will then have cast all their sins into the depths of the sea. Now it's at this point, suggests Dr. Thomas, that Ezekiel 43, which we were looking at this morning, will be accomplished. When Israel and the sanctuary are cleansed, then will be that return of the glory, the time when Christ and the symbolic 144,000 representing the glory of the Elohim of Israel will enter the temple by the way of the gate whose prospect is toward the east. Blessed is he that cometh in the name of Yahweh, Hosanna in the highest. The psalmist has it, lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lift up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. And the question comes back, who is the King of glory? Yahweh, strong and mighty, Yahweh mighty in battle. And again, thinking of those gates on that eastern side, lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be ye lift up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. And again the question comes back, who is the King of glory? Yahweh of armies, he is the King of glory. So following this reconciliation of Israel and the return of the glory, the next thing to be celebrated is the Passover. And it's here, isn't it? Chapter 45, verse 21. In the first month, in the 14th day of the month, ye shall have the Passover, a feast of 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten. And upon that day shall the prince prepare for himself and for all the people of the land a bullock for a sin offering. And the 7 days of the feast he shall prepare a burnt offering to Yahweh, 7 bullocks and 7 rams without blemish daily, the 7 days, and a kid of the goats daily for a sin offering. And he shall prepare a meal offering of an ephah for a bullock, and an ephah for a ram, and an hin of oil for an ephah. In the 7th month, in the 15th day of the month, shall he do likewise in the feast of the 7 days, according to the sin offering, according to the burnt offering, according to the meal offering, and according to the oil. And so again, it's in the 1st month and the 14th day of the month. And Brother Michael was in this area, wasn't he, back in Exodus. But here, it is a Passover looking back. Looking back, first of all, to Gethsemane and Calvary. Whereas the Passover in Exodus was a looking forward. Again, the first day and the 14th month, the first month and the 14th day. Incidentally, it was also the anniversary of the covenant with Abram, the new everlasting covenant. So here we have a feast of 7 days when again unleavened bread shall be eaten. And this is the first reference to the prince in his worship. Let's have a look at verse 22 again. Upon that day shall the prince prepare for himself and for all people of the land a bullock for a sin offering. It's introducing a new code during the constitution of this millennial age which will become an ordinance of the kingdom of Yahweh Shalom. Messiah the Prince is seen to officiate at this feast, according to that verse, of preparing those animals enumerated for a sin offering and burnt offerings and meal offerings daily, which is repeated according to verse 5 in the 7th month and the 15th day of the month. And so I think we can suggest that here with the Prince will be Abram, Isaac and Jacob and David and the prophets and the apostles and the redeemed altogether, the born ones down the ages who have his and his father's name written in their foreheads, constituting a glorious and resurrected bride whose marriage at Sinai is now to be celebrated in the words of Apocalypse 19. Let us be glad and rejoice and give honour to him, for the marriage of the Lamb is come and his wife hath made herself ready. And to her was granted that she should be arrayed in fine linen, clean and white, for fine linen is the righteousness of saints. Blessed are they who are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And so, having arrived by the gate whose prospect is toward the east, like the noise of many waters, we looked at this morning, the redeemed can look upon the Lamb, their Redeemer, saying, blessing and honour and glory and power be unto him that sitteth upon the throne, and to the Lamb forever. And they sing the song of Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvellous are thy works, Yahweh El Shaddai, just and true are all thy ways, thou King of saints. And so we have the reconciliation of Israel, and the dedication of the house, the return of the glory to the temple for the first time since its departures in Zedekiah's day, followed by the celebration of the fulfillment of the Passover. Brother Michael reminded us, didn't he, that the high priest had said in the days of his flesh, before he had been offered, I will not any more eat of it until it be fulfilled in the kingdom of God. And I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of Yahweh should come. There is only one mediator between deity and man, the man Christ Jesus, being an high priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. So again we have this Melchizedek prince involved in the proceedings. It's there in chapter 46 and verse 1. Thus saith Adonai Yahweh, the gate of the inner court that looketh toward the east shall be shut for 6 working days. For on the Sabbath it shall be opened, in the day of the new moon it shall be opened, and the prince shall enter by the way of the porch of that gate without, and shall stand by the post of the gate, and the priest shall prepare his burnt offering and his peace offerings, and he shall worship at the threshold of the gate. Then he shall go forth, but the gate shall not be shut. Likewise the people of the land shall worship at the door of this gate before Yahweh in the Sabbath and in the new moons. Here we have the people, the mortal population who come to worship, verse 3, isn't it? Verse 2 says, the prince enters by the way of the gate of the inner court when it's opened. Verse 1, on the Sabbath and the day of the new moon. In other words, it's from the outer court toward the inner court. This is the outer, and that's the inner, to the left of it, as we look at the east side, of course. And the gate, of course, as Brother Michael explained, the gate on the really outside has been shut, chapter 44, verse 1, and will not be opened anymore. But verse 8 here explains that the prince returns by the same way as he enters. But verse 9, those mortal population that enter by the north, up there, will depart by the south, and those that enter by the south will depart by the north. I understand my time is nearly gone, so verses 4 to 7 and 11 to 15 of chapter 46 enumerates the animal sacrifices to be offered, first prepared by the Levites. I think Brother Michael made this quite clear, chapter 44, verse 10, the mortal priests, and then handed to the priests, the Levites, the sons of Zadok, the immortal priests. Chapter 44, verse 15. And they will convey them to the altar up there. In other words, the burnt offerings, the sin offering, and the trespass offerings. This then is the privilege of Zadok's seed to approach the altar on behalf of the prince, because they are now, as we have seen, a princely community. And all these offerings are in retrospect. In other words, it's a memorial service. It's not typical. Not anymore. Can I conclude by quoting some words of Dr. Thomas, where he says, the reconciliation will be a memorial reconciliation made perfect by the blood of the covenant which institutes it. When the prince under the new covenant prepares for himself and for all the people a bullock for a sin offering, chapter 45, verse 22, it is a memorial of his own sacrifice of himself and a memorial of the reconciliation which the people enjoy through the blood of the covenant, with which, through faith in it, their hearts will be sprinkled, even as true believers have had their hearts sprinkled as at present. So we can see that the sacrifices in the kingdom, which some would deny, are there, but they are retrospective, they are memorial. May we be privileged by Yahweh's grace to be part of that glory and participate in that joy at that time.